My name is Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic. I was going to take the mic off and walk around like Donahue, but I decided that was probably sacrilegious. Thank you for the sweet opening, Gail. It kind of feels good to be called sacrilegious. I don't know why. I promise I will try not to swear tonight. I am sober, but I'm not perfect, thank God. I'm getting a little better in that area. My sobriety date is August 18th of 87, and I hit the doors at 23 years old. So if you're new and you're young, there's hope. And I didn't know that I would ever be up here and working on almost 20 years, which kind of just throws me for an absolute loop. Grew up in a family of six kids, and my parents were drinkers, social drinkers. My mom would have a half a beer and split it with someone. And my dad would have a highball, and he would let it, the ice melt. And but if you go outside the family, there are some really good drunks, and I somehow copped the gene on the way out. And the first drink I had that I knew maybe it tasted good was when probably I was about 7 years old. We would, have the nice Sunday dinner where you're supposed to dress up after church and sit at the table and be like young girls and boys and use the right utensils. And, my parents were trying to groom us for like whatever. And we always had little glasses of wine, and I loved cleaning the table on Sunday. Dude, I was there, because the other kids weren't finishing their drinks, and I didn't get that. I didn't get why they weren't. I liked it. But the first time I really got drunk, was when I was about maybe 12 or 13. We lived in Montreal, and I was on a mountain in the Laurentians, and I was supposedly going skiing. Of course, I had never been skiing, but I BS'd my way on this trip to go skiing because I really wanted to fit in. And just to let you know, this was probably my fourth move by the time we moved up there, so we had moved a lot as kids. We had lived in Orlando back in 72, and I was driving down, I can't remember the street up here, but there's a house like about a mile away that I remember when I was about 12 sneaking out with my friends and stealing their father's car. And we got down the hill and went downtown to Old Shakey's and had some beer and came back. I was just thinking about this. It was really weird. And then we figured, how are we going to move the car up the hill to the driveway? So, of course, we just pulled in, climbed back in the window, and I remember getting a deep doo-doo for that. But the mountain deal was really where I had my first, romantic excursion with booze. I always say I remember my first drunk better than my first kiss. So it tells you kind of the role alcohol played in my life. I know I probably had a kiss prior to that. I know I did. I had a kiss near Holden Ave with this fat kid named Paul Motley. And, it was one of those things, let's go down into the grove and kiss because I want to see what this thing's about. So we took our bikes down there and we kissed and, I punched him and took off. I didn't want him to think like I liked him or something, but I wasn't really enthralled with that. That was okay, But drinking was something different in my life, and I remember standing on that mountain, and I really wanted to be a part of this group. And I've got to tell you that, my story is tinged with one growing up experience of a soon-to-be brother-in-law that felt it necessary to harm me for many, many years. So I have, part of my story is that I was molested at a very young age, and I kept that secret for many, many years. Even in sobriety, I kept that secret, and it about kicked my ass. And I swore, Gail, so just number one. I walked around with fear from about the age of 9 till even years into sobriety, and Fair was my closest companion next to booze. I think if you asked me as a kid what I felt prior to that situation in my life, I was pretty happy, outgoing, a little awkward, you know, a little chunky, well, you know, not always feeling like part of. I had to scream real loud because I was the youngest, so I had to make my stake on the, you know, dinner table and things like that. But that day, standing on that mountain and being handed that flask and taking that first tug on that bottle and watching it go down inside of me was probably one of the most spiritual experiences I had up until that moment. It burnt. Man, I thought someone was causing fire inside of me, but I kept the bottle for the rest of the day. I can't tell you if I skied. You know, I probably did. You know, probably didn't. I can tell you I drank the rest of the flask along with other things, and I was wasted as wasted could be. And I remember the next day when I got up and was puking and hugging, you know, King Porcelain, I kept thinking, God, I can't wait till I drink again. That's the drunk I am. So, you know, I don't know if I ever had any social drinking experiences. I'd like to think along the way I did, but I drank to get drunk. And as Johnny says, I drank like a pig. And that came up later in my drinking. So, you know, I started drinking, and I started finding ways to get the drink. And, you know, stealing out of the parents, you know, wine cabinet, and going to friends' houses. And there was a lot of Italian kids I hung with, so we'd go to their house after school, and they drank. They were allowed to drink, and they drank normal, and I was the one that was like, let's go to your house for snack time, because you got the hookup, and I want to get hooked. And so that's how it was. I mean, drinking was very okay with a lot of the people that I grew up with. It wasn't a big deal, but I got to tell you, drink did for me, you know, it made me feel tall, it made me feel together, glamorous, like I could speak. I didn't feel awkward. I just felt like at one with self. And I've got to tell you, that fear subsided. And, you know, I wanted to be bigger than life. We moved back to the States again, and I graduated high school, which was pretty amazing. I was saying something tonight at dinner, you know, it's kind of funny the stuff you think when you're knowing you're going to speak, but when I graduated high school, you know, it was, I was the last, so my parents were thrilled at the prospect of hopefully I would be leaving soon. And they knew at this point something wasn't right with me. I'm not sure if they could figure out exactly what wasn't right. I think they suspected it may have been King alcohol, but they weren't too sure. And they had sent me to a shrink once, and they put me on some meds a couple times. But they had this big, you know, graduation party. They said, invite a few friends over, you know, we'll celebrate that you actually made it through high school. Whoop-de-doo, you know. And because I wasn't very scholastic, as I'm sure you can imagine. There were other things on my agenda. I was very busy and very important in my own mind, and schooling just wasn't part of my deal, but I did it. So I was told, because I was, you know, already there, and this was in the day when your parents actually served drinks to your friends, you know, it's 82, and so my dad had beer and wine and a little nice food, and I was told there was like 80 kids that came to the house. I took off for a few hours because I had other parties to go to. And years later, my mom was like, we were so pissed that we were entertaining your friends, or whatever they were. So, you know, that's how my life was. I wanted to be the life of the party, but I didn't even obviously feel comfortable at my own party that I went to someone else's party. I didn't even want to be where I was, and I'm sure when I was at that other party, I was thinking about someone else's party. That's how my life was. I was never really comfortable being at one place for any length of time, or in my own skin, for that matter, for any length of time, and drink did for me what I needed it to do. Fast forward, I went to college for a year. I drank my way through college. I had a lot of notes sent home from college. I didn't even know they did that, but they did. And they basically told my parents that it was probably advisable to maybe not invite me back next year. And So when my dad came to pick me up on the last day of college, he found me in the corner of the room, kind of tilted over, propped up on a suitcase, and my friends were packing up my bags, and I was drunk again. I ought to tell you that, you know, when I look back, and I mean this sincerely, from like 18 on, there are a lot of like gaping holes. You know, it's like the universe. There are black holes, and that's how it is in my looking back. There's just, I don't remember that my dad picked me up. I mean, these are things I found out after the fact, that I was, you know, slouched and drunk again. And, you know, they really tried. They really wanted good for me. You know, they really wanted the best in the world for me. Then my dad busted his butt to provide for us. And I've got to tell you, I was just very not so grateful about what he was giving me, because it was never enough, you know. So here we are, we're trying to figure out what we want to be when we grow up. I go to a tech college, I make it through that drunk, but I actually did real well, which was unbelievable. And, you know, I found myself in doing outside sales. So I was about maybe 19, 20 at this point. And I love doing outside sales, you know. You could be an actress every freaking day, you know. And if you didn't want to show up, you could say you were doing sales calls. And I did a lot of not showing up and pretending to do sales calls. And I used to drink at this place, Jimmy Mac's in Tampa. And so, you know, by 3 o'clock when they would open up after the lunch crowd, I would be at the end of the bar writing poetry. Getting in touch with my inner drunk. And, you know, it was pretty insane. And, you know, I would sit there with the rest of the drunks trying to figure out what we wanted to do when we grew up. And most of these people were now my age, you know, so obviously they were never going to figure out what they were going to do when they grew up. But I was with them, tagging along. And I didn't make it through too many jobs for any good length of time. I mean, I would get a job, go and do well for a while, make a couple good sales, be their little star, you know. And then I would start showing up a little hungover, and then I would show up and I'd have the bottle with me in my purse or my briefcase. And then, you know, I was in the bathroom drinking, and then I would be asked to leave, or I would quit because I found something better, which meant I knew the gig was up and they were coming after me, so it was time to go to the next job. And I did this a lot. I did this a lot in my life with a lot of things. You know, I jumped a lot. My mother used to call me Maggie Trudeau, who was the wife of the Prime Minister in Canada, and that woman was a photographer one week and an actress the next, and, you know, an economist the next. And that's what my mother used to call me. You're Maggie Trudeau. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Because you're jumping in your life. You need to settle down. You know, that's what you tell the alcoholic that you don't know is really alcoholic yet. So, you know, my dad, in his wise ways, wanted to find me a good Catholic boy, because that would certainly help. Right, Frankie? And so he set me up on a few blind dates. One was a guy that was like 6'9", that he didn't tell me he was like 6'9" until I opened up the door and I said hello, and I was like, hello. He was great because he could go in the bar before me, look around and say, go to that table, you squeeze through to that table over there. And I'm... we drank alike, and it was great. He was a great guy. I don't know what happened with that. That's like a lot of what happens. You know, I dated someone really nice, but then I don't know how it ended. So, he hooks me up with this other nice Catholic boy that he met in his little Bible study, and I said, I don't know why I would say yes to this. I obviously was very sick, and I obviously knew I needed some help, and I don't know, maybe I was trying to appeal to my dad's wisdom and also hit him up for some cash, which I was very good at doing too. So he hooks me up with this guy, nice guy, pulls up in his beat-up car, not so good. Now, mind you, I had a beat-up car, but I had higher standards than that one. People I dated, that eventually went down. So anyways, you know, we go out on a first date, and you know, you have to do the pre-drinking before the date, because you're going to try to put makeup on, you can't do that sober. Good. And then you have the drinks in the shower, and then you drink so that your parents don't know you're in the bedroom drinking, and then the nice guy shows up and you're already kind of, you know, hey. So we go out on this date, and he's, you know, ordering iced tea. and I'm ordering my before dinner drinks, and then we eat, and I'm having my dinner drinks, which was usually about the same at that point. It was scotch, no ice, a little lime, and yeah, I was a great drinker. And then we had our after dinner drinks, and he had iced tea, and then he said a prayer and dropped me off at the house, and I thought, what was that? Scared the hell out of me. But I went out with him again, so obviously not so well. I think it was our second or third date, I don't know, somewhere in there, because mind you, I was drinking and also had some other things going on the side, because I could never date one person, because you always had to have your drinking boyfriend, because you know you were going to really get drunk there, and it was for free, because there was always a price tag, but who cares? Free drinks, no taking money out of your own pocket, that was always good. But anyways, I kept going out with this sober guy, and on our third date, he said that, hey, we have to go pick up some people. And do you mind doing that? I said, I don't care. You know, I'm on for the ride. Well, we pick up these really freaky looking people at this one just dive of a place in Tampa, and they get in the car, and I'm like, what the hell are we doing? Salvation Army drive here? Right? Yeah. Okay, so then we go to this other part, and I find out that we are at an AA clubhouse. Yeah. Boy, was that good for a good drinking date. So anyways, we go to about our fourth date, and that's when he takes me to my first AA meeting. And I've got to tell you, I was in there for about a half an hour, and I got up in the middle of the meeting, and I looked at him, and I said, hey, I know you're drinking, you're an alcoholic, whatever. I'm next door at the bar if you need me, okay? Because I was definitely not alcoholic. I knew something wasn't right with me. But I knew it wasn't my drinking yet. So anyways, I meet this other guy along my excursions of many sales jobs, and he just thinks I'm the most talented person he had ever met. Oh, you're so talented, great salesperson. Mind you, we were both drinkers. We like to drink together. So, you know, mutual admiration society. You know how it is when you're at the bar and, oh man, you're so cool. Yeah, you're so cool too. So anyways, he says, hey, I'm going to Miami. I have a great job down there. I think you'd be fabulous. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I need a change of scenery because, you know, Tampa's not doing it for me anymore. And, you know, life sucks here. And I can't find a good guy and can't make any money. And, you know, oh, yeah, number two. But it wasn't a bad swear, Gail. So, you know, we get together. He puts a contract together. He was actually a smart alcoholic. And I signed it, you know, at Hooters when we were both there, and crash our car. And he's like, you're going to do fabulous down there. And I was so excited. Now, mind you, at this point, I started showing physical signs of being the alcoholic woman. The perpetual red face that even makeup couldn't get rid of. About 90 pounds at that point. I thought I was just fabulous looking. And that perpetual yellow tint to the white of your eyes. But nothing was wrong with me. I just needed some money. So I told my parents I'm moving. I was hoping they'd hook me up with a nice birth going away party. And they said, no, we're not going to throw you a going away party. They'd already gone through a lot of crap with me. I'll be home. I wouldn't show up for a day or two, or I'll be home. And the best lie, we still joke about this, was when I told them, I went to a party, I don't remember. I was in Tampa somewhere, and I remember waking up at 6 in the morning going, oh my God, holy cow. I was supposed to be home 5 hours ago or something like that. So I called him up, oh, my car broke down on the roundabout on I-4 to 275. And my brothers were like, she is lying. And I was. They knew it. You know, this was pre-cell phone day, so, you know. And I had to walk somewhere. I made this just bogus lie. And, you know, she knew. They both knew that something wasn't right with me. And so my mom said to me, you know, look, this is the deal. Good luck. We're happy for you. We hope you find what you're looking for. But our fear is that we're going to be seeing you next time in a body bag. So obviously my drinking was pretty corrosive at that point. Go to Miami. Star Wonder, you know, that 4-month deal where you do great for 4 months You know, you go in, you show up, you dress nice, you actually work for a few hours in the day. And, you know, and I moved to this big apartment on a golf course. Like, I don't golf, okay, but I wanted to look like I was supposed to be in Miami. And, like, probably 3 months into living there, my brother helped me sneak out, move out, like, at midnight to a dump in the Gables. Because, you know, my money started dwindling then because I couldn't keep up the facade of being, like, okay without a drink. You know, not like I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't drinking all day like I was in Tampa. So the guy that I went down there with, I think, was getting a little fed up with me. And even some of the people I started hooking up with, because we always gravitate to the drunks. We could go to a town, plunk me down, and I'm going to find the best drunks I can to hang with. And even so, you know, where I live, where I work, I found them. So we all used to go out drinking, and there was a guy that I thought drank like I drank. I found out he was the designated driver when I finally got sober. He was black belt Al-Anoner. And he called me to his office one day, and he said, look, this is the deal. I'm going to give you this number. I want you to call this number. So I called the number. I went to my desk. And in my mind, I'm thinking, cha-ching, ching, here it comes, some cash for mommy, you know? Because I'm thinking cash is going to make me better. My life is really going down the tubes fast, you know? I have that bowl on the table with all these bills, and then I pick a bill a month to pay, you know? That's really good. And the eviction notices, and you call, and you make plans, you know, can I pay every week? Yeah, that worked real good. And then you call the parents, I lost my rent check, or I lost my paycheck, and you'll hear about that when I start talking about my steps. But so anyways, he said, call the number, you know. So I did, and the guy on the other line said, the club, and I said, the club, and he says, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went, holy cow. Gonna be my new swear. I don't have to pay for that one. I was so mad at this guy. I could not imagine, you know, flag, white flag two, AA shows up again, supposedly a friend, you know, how dare he? Does he know who I am? All the crap I've put up with him and our friendship. You know, I kept that number. That's the thing that's most amazing in my story to me. That obviously shows there was a God working in my life already, long before I would ever acknowledge him. I grew up with a God, but I gotta tell you, that mountain experience, my God was totally shifted from pray to the sky to drink out of the bottle. So, you know, I did the foxhole prayers as a drunk, and I used to do my rosaries, which is really funny. So if you're Catholic, you know what that means. If you're not, oh well. And I don't know why I would pray, but I didn't really believe because I knew things weren't working well in my life. But so anyways, I kept that number, like I said. And I was one of those weird drunks that would, like, go running and have vitamins and drink. And so I used to go running in Coral Gables, you know, all 85 whomping pounds of me, trying to look good, man. And I'd go by this one street, and it was like this freaky little house with all these weird people on the outside smiling, smoking. And I knew that's where they cut those chicken heads, you know. It's like some voodoo cult thing down there. And but I would run past that place every day. I think more out of curiosity. I'm not really sure why. I would eventually be walking into that place because I found out that was the AA clubhouse. My drinking got real bad. I mean, I was, you know, not even capable some nights of leaving the office parking lot because I had already been drinking too much during that day, that I would basically stay in the car and sleep there. My office was in Hialeah, so if you know anything about Miami, it was not a real safe neighborhood for a young girl to be sleeping in the car. I'm sure I didn't even remember to lock the doors, not like that would have helped. I would get up out of the car seat and do that to the air and be all under the eye makeup and hope that no one noticed me as I was kind of rolling out of the car with the same clothes from the day before. You know, I started showing up to accounts drunk. I had one of my blackout experiences where I had this big account that I had been going for months. I finally got the appointment. I was so excited. I went to the house of my boyfriend at the time that I was dating, and he was going to cook me a big gourmet dinner to celebrate. I get these nice guys sometimes, you know, that didn't even drink like I drank. So it shows you they were not well in many areas because they were dating me. And I remember him opening up the door and the whoop of food, and out came red wine from that day, and didn't do very well on his white carpet. And the next morning, I was told he dressed me up, sent me off my way, and I came to in the middle of this appointment that I had worked months to get. And I just was mortified because I knew that I was at that appointment and I didn't know what the heck I was talking about. To say the least, I was asked to leave. And when I got to the office, I was basically informed she said, never allow her back. So that was the beginning of the end. I mean, that's how my life was. My parents didn't even really like me to show up because I would show up and I would be drunk and I would be on their couch, not so ladylike at times and not so charming and demanding. You know, we get very demanding when we're drunks. Of course, we have nothing to be demanding about, but boy, we think everyone owes us something, and I certainly did. But you know, I didn't do crap for anyone else, but I certainly wanted my take, damn it. It just was like insane. I was drinking at a bar with this guy that I had hooked up with, one of those not so good relationships. My morals, my standards were really kind of plummeting, and I'd like, well, I'm only going to be really sick if I do this, and I do it. Well, if I do this, it won't be that bad. And so my standards kept coming down, and so this guy was a real, I consider, a bad drinker. He obviously thought the same about me, because we were sitting there at this bar one day, and it was a pretty cheap bar on First Avenue in Miami, and he said, you know, that A didn't work real well for me, but I think it could work pretty good for you. Yeah, we didn't date after that. You know, my life was becoming pretty insane. I was the one that, my apartment was really bad. It was like, there was my window, and there was the window of the next apartment real close. And I'd keep all my lights on at night, and I'd move furniture around to the door because I was afraid someone was going to come get me. It was pretty insane. I was hearing voices and not good. Well, one morning I woke up and I just knew I needed help. I guess I became convinced that maybe drinking was kind of a problem. So I called that number in the billfold that I had, and I thought I was being very original. I called and I said, I got a friend. She's very sick. She would like the book so she can study to take the test. Yeah, that's real original. I've come to do the hotline and find me on the other end many a time. So, you know, the funny part was that I finally got myself together, and I find that I'm going to that little place where I think they're cutting chicken heads. And it was. I get there. I got to tell you that I walked in, and it was the first time I was actually in a place where I felt people were genuinely smiling. And this place was a dump. You know, those ratty-ass AA couches, you know, and the nice brown motif on the wall, and, you know, the lawn chair, and the folding chairs, and the stuffed chair. And it was like, you know, that AA motif. And I walked in, and I was just overwhelmed with the idea that people were like talking and laughing and smiling. You know, I'd been to some pretty nice bars and some pretty not so nice bars, and it'd been a long time since I'd been in a bar where I felt like even I was genuine, you know, let alone anyone else. And it was pretty neat. I gotta tell you, I didn't stay. I told them I had something to do that night, which I did, you know, because I had important things to do. And I was told I showed up 3 days later in a blackout. And then when I finally came to a meeting sober, I met my neighbors that lived below me. And they were very excited with the prospect of me hopefully getting sober. Yes, they were ready to get the moving at 3 a.m. to stop. Yes, the old throwing the beer bottles out the back window so no one would know I was really drinking. Now, mind you, I lived alone, but you know. Yes, it was real exciting. There was a car lot back there, too, so it was very strategic how you threw the bottles. And I got to tell you, this is the deal. I got there, and I'm not really sure what, you know, prompted me to make that phone call. I think I was convinced that something wasn't right, but I'm going to tell you, I did not stay sober. I went to meetings for a year, and I drank. I had the perpetual AA, I'm not done drinking pocketbook that was about yay big that I would put the bottle in. Mind you, I hated purses, but I bought one because I was like, if I'm going to drink and go to meetings, I don't want them to know I'm drinking and going to meetings. And I will tell you, if you are drinking and going to meetings, that's okay, because they kept me sane long enough to where I could finally get sober. There was a lot of, you know, fun ha-has about it. I mean, I was the one that would ask to chair a meeting because it had a microphone, and because I had an ego, and they let me, and then all of a sudden the mic would be moving this way because they knew I wasn't sober. It was pretty obvious. And then I would be the one with the high heels with the little nails sticking out, click, 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 and be walking through the meeting and talking about being sober, and they were like, your ass ain't sober. Had a lot of white chips, tried to pick up a couple 90-day chips, handed it back because I knew I wasn't sober 90 days, but damn it, I wanted a 90-day chip. You know, the dropping the bottle in the bathroom. Yeah, taking the pieces of glass just because, you know, I wasn't wealthy. I was far from wealthy. I just, you know, I was sick. I was a young, sick girl. They loved me enough, obviously, to allow me to keep coming back. They eventually started removing me from meetings when I started chatting a little too much and arguing, and they'd lift the chair up and put me outside on the street, and they'd say, until you can be quiet, you're not welcome back. And I'd pick up my damn chair and walk back in there and go, because I wanted to be in that meeting. I wanted sobriety. I really wanted, no, I'm not going to say anything. I really wanted what you had, but I've got to tell you, I was too afraid of the prospect of doing this thing life without a drink in my body. It had been a long time since I had drawn a sober breath. It had been a long time, not 30 years, you know, not 50 years, 10 years. It was plenty good for me. I was dying, basically, was what was going on. And, you know, there's a guy down there, Coach, an old guy, he used to say to me, just keep coming back, something's going to stick. And he was right. My last drunk was, oh, God, it was pretty insane. Bad things going on at the job I had. I didn't know I had been fired. Yeah, you know, it's kind of bad when you're unpacking a year later and you find out you were fired. I was pissed off, you know. But I was fired. I didn't know that. And I guess I had some eviction notices. So my life was really kind of in not very good shape. And some bad stuff at the office. And so I went to this guy's house to prove I was not an alcoholic and to kind of convince him not to say something. Anyways, this is the deal. I had my first fist fight with an ex-Marine. I lost. I was thrown out of a car door. You know, it was a pretty sick night. A lot of drinking. I don't remember too much. I remember coming to off of Lejeune in Miami, looking over. There was a cop car. I went back out, I guess, in my mind somewhere else. You know how we do as in our blackouts. And when I came to, I was in the hospital. I was told I drove from North Miami to the Gable Room, and I parked my car outside, and I was trying to get out of my car, and I fell towards the steering wheel, and I started dying on my own vomit. So I am, you know, pretty lucky to be here tonight, and there's nothing I did other than drive my silly butt to the Gable room that night, and God intervened with the help of the good folks at AA. You know, there was 10 people waiting outside for me. This mean doctor walked out and said, next time I see you, if you continue the way you're drinking, you will be in a body bag. Second time I heard that in my life. I don't know what happened that morning. I always get choked up, you know, but something happened that morning. I remember laying there looking at this person reflected backing at me from this two-way mirror, and I thought, oh my God, I'm dead. And then I had the second thought, I'm done. God help me. And I haven't had a drink since. And it's only by the grace of God and the rooms of AA and the steps and the sponsor and a lot of service work and just availing myself to the process. You know, my parents called that morning. I don't know if I called them or they called me or something, but my mom knew. My mom has that radar, you know, moms have. She always knew when I was up to crap. And I think she also knew that she was probably in a position where she could have lost her kid. They invited me home. They said, you're welcome to move back to Lakeland with us. You're welcome to move into our house. You pick up a thimble full of drink, your ass is out on the street, and we're done with you. They were pretty adamant. I know when my mom's pissed. She has a little Indian and a little French, and she's Catholic, so you always know when they're pissed. And it took me 3 days to you know, pack the car with whatever I could. I left an apartment full of furniture down there, you know. Packed my car with, like, a light, you know, pots and pans, like I never cooked. Suitcase. Moved home. 3-day drive from Miami up to Lakeland. I detoxed in someone's hotel room, and it is only by the grace of God that I didn't die through that process, you know. Anyways, I moved home, and God love them. I think about them allowing me to move back in. They were really throwing dice, I've got to tell you, because my track record was just, you know, not so glowing. I went to a meeting one night, and, you know, now, mind you, I just hit bottom. My life is in shambles. I don't realize I've lost my job. I don't have an apartment. I've moved home at the age of 23. That sucks. Life is not good, but I still have an ego. So I go to this meeting, and they said, any visitors? That's me. I'm a visitor. Any newcomers coming back in? Not me. No, no, not I. So they said, why don't you come up and share? And I said, okay. And 10 minutes later, they said, why don't you sit down and we'll talk to you after the meeting. And so that's what they did. This fat guy, Paul, who has since passed away, he was pretty inspirational in my early sobriety. Big fat dude, cigar out here, walks up to me and says, kid, which I hate being called kid, and especially fresh from a drunk, I'm sure I was really pissed off. And he goes, I want you to meet someone. I said, okay. It's a woman I'd like you to meet. And I'm thinking, I'm going to do service work. Because I've got 3 days, I'm feeling pretty good, you know? I've got a lot to share now. And he said, you're just what the doctor ordered, a good, fresh, drunk one, someone sick. And I was pissed. Now, I didn't get to choose the ability to choose my own sponsor. That woman walked up, it was his wife, and he said, Joyce, Suzanne, Joyce. And Joyce took me through the steps of AA, through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she got me engaged in the process of living sober a day at a time. I will tell you that I am indebted to her and to her husband and to many people early in my sobriety that basically put up with me, and I mean they put up with me, you know, through some pretty crazy times. 3 months sober, I got a call from my mom that my brother had been hit by a drunk driver and they were giving him last rites. So I drove from Lakeland with my sister down to South Florida, and I remember sitting by my brother's bed holding his hand, and I mean, his head was like E.T., it was huge, and something happened there. It was kind of a spiritual experience, and I thought, that could have been me that hit my brother. you know, he has since made it through. We call him, you know, the bionic man, because this side of him is all metal, you know. So, like, when he goes through a metal detector, he, like, really goes off. It's pretty funny. But, you know, something happened that day when I sat with him, and I thought, there is nothing so bad that a drink is going to fix. I understood what that meant. A lot of those cliches my sponsor kept me on for a long time, because I was kind of a slow variety girl, you know. She taught me how to, like, start getting a little honesty in my life. And not necessarily cash register honesty, but we needed some of that, but just honesty about, you know, doing the right thing. I remember going to her house one night because I needed to get a job. My parents said, okay, it's time to get a J-O-B because you've got some cash to pay back. And she said, let me see your resume. And I handed it to her, and she goes, how much of this is the truth? And I'm like, not very much. She's like, put down your jobs, get honest, get a job. And that's how it's been in my sobriety. You know, no one, I've been very lucky and very fortunate that my sponsors have not put up with much of my crap, you know. And my sponsor today still doesn't. She says, get over your cheap self. That's her favorite line with me. Love her. You know, I will say a few things. My early sobriety, you know, I was very fortunate. I really grabbed hold of wanting to get through the steps. I was desperate. I was afraid I was going to find this God that you guys were talking about. Holy God Almighty. I was afraid I wasn't going to find him, and then I was going to be screwed. I wasn't going to be able to get sober. I would be drunk, and lo and behold, the big Catholic funeral. I mean, I'm a good alcoholic. Drama. Yeah. I remember going to my sponsor's house one night, and I said, man, I haven't found him, and I really am just afraid I'm not going to get sober. And she said, that is the smartest thing you have said. Get on your knees, let's do the third step prayer, and let's get on with getting busy. You will be contacted. Do the remaining steps. And, you know, she was right. And that is still how it is in my life today. You know, she never promised me a rose garden when I got sober. She said, if you do the deal, and you give back to others, and you connect with a God in your life, and you try to do the next right thing, and you won't all the time. Trust me, you won't. If she knew me. So she wasn't setting the bar real high for me. She's, you know, we aim for perfection, but we don't get there. She said, you know, you will be able to do the deal. And she's been right. My sobriety has been a journey and a half. You know, I've learned how to be a worker among workers. You know, I've been really fortunate and blessed with being able to live out some dreams in my life. You know, there have been challenges. You know, at 17 years sobriety, I hit the deepest depression I think I've ever hit in my life. And I didn't know I was there until I was there. And I mean that sincerely. And I was sitting right where Brent's sitting in a woman's meeting, and I said, I am 17 years sober, and I just feel like I'm in a dark cave, and I'm not sure what's going on. And I went into counseling, and I'm grateful that the rooms of AA are here for me, but sometimes I need outside help with certain things in my life. And I'm there again today. You know, I'm walking through stuff in my life today. And part of it is I'm walking through my own set of fear and circumstances that I've put together in my head and in my life. It's not, you know, it's not about getting perfect in this thing. It's just about peeling the onion. And what a challenge it's been. But, you know, it's been pretty cool, too. I'm invited back to the family house, you know. They allow me to stay over. They don't even worry about having booze in the house with me there, because booze is not my problem today. I am my worst enemy. You know, I don't need a drink to be insane, I can tell you that. Ask him. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I've learned how to grow up in this program. I was 23 when I got here. I didn't think I'd make it a day, let alone almost 20 years. I struggled to remember where I lived when I first got here. I used to write my name and phone number down and my parents' address because my mind was totally whacked. And today I'm able to, you know, be in a job that allows me to think a lot, and I do it okay. I have two stepkids that love me for who I am, and they have allowed me in their life. That's a concept. A great husband that has absolutely put up with me and loves me in spite of me. And I have great friends. You know, I have a lot in my life today that I just wouldn't have imagined when I got here. All I wanted when I got here was not to look for a bottle under the bed so that I can make it from the bed to the bathroom to throw up to drink one more time. That is all I wanted. And I have gotten oodles more. I've gotten my dignity back, my self-respect, and I've got a sense of humor back, which I lost at a very young age. And I am grateful for my sobriety. I appreciate you all being here. I love this room. You know, I've been with Central now for 13 years, from the little old house to over here, high class owned. And I kind of miss the old house, that stench, you know. Kind of remind me of the Gables room. But I'm grateful for my sobriety, and I appreciate you all being a part of it and allowing me to be here tonight. Thank you.